Welcome to the Vero Yahad Essene Scripture Forum. Controversial issues? You bet. Straight answers? Of course. Truth? You be the judge. For you're welcome to participate. Shabbat afternoons at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Log in at www.theyahad.com. See you there. Dear listeners, before we get started, let me warn you that this podcast is graphic. Not for children, not for the squeamish. But if you do listen and you have response, please get in touch with me. This is a very important topic, and I would like to know what your experience is with this kind of religion. Please get a hold of me, veroyahad@gmail.com, and I thank you. Greetings and felicitations, thou little flock. Thank you for coming out on this Shabbat afternoon. All right, well, the few minutes that you can be here will be a blessing to all of us, especially if you're going to go and do a service. That's exciting. If you were at the service this morning, you heard my long talk about deliverance ministry and hearing voices. I want to follow up on that by referring again to Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil. There are very explicit references to certain demonic practices in this book that are told in great detail, even right down to the profanities that have been used and descriptions of what I would consider to be very perverted acts. And these are specifically blended into the mass of Satan, the black mass, which Martin, in one case, identifies and describes in detail. I want to read that description to you, but I have to tell you that it's not going to be easy to read because of the explicit nature of the writing. As for Malachi Martin, if you're not familiar with him, he's been called the whistleblower of the Vatican, a prolific writer, once a priest, very close to the Vatican, leaving the priesthood for a teaching position and writing in later life. He spent the rest of his life in exposing the Vatican. A couple of his books here, The Windswept House, is a novel about the Vatican, again, an expose of the demonic activities and practices of people highest in the Vatican order. Probably his best known book is The Keys of This Blood, Pope John Paul II versus Russia and the West for Control of the New World Order. This guy is no crackpot. His writings are erudite, and as I said before, very fully detailed and referenced. Another book that was popular is called The Jesuits. He was a Jesuit, and the main reason for him leaving the priesthood was because of the practices of the Jesuits, which he again describes in detail. He has a little book that's an interview with them. It's called The Kingdom of Darkness, where he talks about his experiences in deliverance and also about his expose of the church. And one more called The Decline and Fall of the Roman Church. All of these you can get on Amazon, but The Decline and Fall is an older book, and it's expensive because it's hard to find. If you see one at the Goodwill or something or anything by him, pick them up. So what I want to do is an extended quotation from this book, and then I would like to discuss it with you. That is Hostage to the Devil. Has anybody read this book? This is about my third time through. And as we go through, would you please make note of your questions or comments? I wouldn't even care if you interrupted this reading. The case he's dealing with is entitled The Virgin and the Girl Fixer. It's about a man who, from his earliest times, felt a calling to be the fullness of both man and woman. Consequently, as an adult, he went through a sex change surgery, hoping to keep the attributes of both male and female. And as the demon invited him with the promise that he would indeed feel the fullness of both genders, which was unusual in that he never portrayed any feminine characteristics in his childhood. But this all came about when he was contemplating this as a boy in the woods all by himself, and he began to hear the voices and the promises. He goes by the name Richard Rita. He took both names because of his desire to experience both genders at the same time. And again, this is the promise of the demonic entities that chose him to enter. And when he gets to the end of his wits, then he seeks out a priest for deliverance because he had been a Christian before. And so you'll know I'm talking about him if I refer to Richard Rita. This is just a rather short excerpt in the much longer text. So in the course of Richard Rita's journey, he meets somebody that changes his life, a man named Paul. Paul, a Chicagoan, a former minister who had turned to banking and brokerage and become a millionaire in the process, was a very impressive character. Tall and good-looking, with salt and pepper hair, suave, well-dressed, educated, a very good conversationalist. Paul had a brilliant smile. He and Richard Rita liked each other from the first moment they met at a cocktail party. Richard eventually told Paul his life history. He was surprised by Paul's matter-of-fact reaction. What amazed Richard Rita more than that was Paul's understanding of his difficulty in having intercourse and in its aftermath. "I think something can be done about all that, Rita," Paul said, "but you'll have to consummate a carefully arranged marriage." "Marriage? But marriage is impossible, at least very difficult," answered Richard Rita. "Not the marriage I have in mind. You just need the right partner under the right circumstances. You don't realize it, but you've been preparing for quite a while for this marriage. Just leave it all to me." Richard Rita didn't understand what Paul meant until he participated in the Black Mass on June 21st, 1971. The invitation he received from Paul was ostensibly for a midnight party. It was a sultry night without a patch of wind. When Richard Rita arrived around 10 p.m., he was struck by the lavish surrounding. The house, dating from the previous century, stood in its own grounds. About 80 guests were drinking and eating a cold buffet around an open-air pool illuminated by tall, thick candles. Another 40 guests were dancing inside the ballroom. The air was full of chattering, laughter, and music and celebration. Paul immediately introduced Richard Rita to a table at which two young women and their escorts sat. Merriment pervaded the group. Everybody was excited and happy. From his position, Richard Rita could see both ends of the pool. At each end, there was a long table covered with food, drinks, ice buckets, and flour. Behind each table, a long wall-high embroidered red curtain hung from a pole. A butler in black evening clothes stood motionless by each curtain. Richard Rita felt surprisingly at home. He joined in the laughter and talk around the table and cheered as some of the more mellowed guests shoved each other fully clothed into the water. At 12:45, Richard Rita suddenly noticed a hush. Nobody was speaking any longer. The stereo music had gone silent. Without him realizing it, about three-quarters of the guests had departed. The two couples who had been at his table had excused themselves shortly before, saying that they wanted to dance. The guests who remained had fallen silent. They stood in two groups at either end of the pool, facing each other across the water. Then Richard Rita noticed his tall host signaling to two butlers. With solemn movement, they pulled aside the curtain. When the curtains parted, Richard Rita could see a low altar table at either end of the pool. Above each altar, there hung an ornament in the shape of an inverted triangle. At its center, there was an inverted crucifix, the head of the crucified resting on the angle of the apex of the triangle. From the interior of the house, he now heard the low peals of an organ, and someone was burning incense there, so that the fumes drifted out lazily and lay across the air like slowly twisting blue serpents. Then the guests started to undress in an unconcerned fashion, each one dropping his his or her clothes where they stood. As if on signal, both groups turned and started to come around the sides of the pool toward Richard Rita. He started to get up when Paul's hand fell on his shoulder, gently but firmly. "Wait, Rita." The naked guests filled around him and stood stock still. No one had yet spoken a word. Then Paul took Richard Rita's arm so that he stood up. 20 pairs of arms stretched out from all sides, and unhurriedly, calmly, they undressed Richard Rita. His host, Paul, was nowhere to be seen at that moment. Then one guest, a young blonde man in his late 20s, he came forward. Around his neck, he wore a narrow black stole. There was a ruby ring on the index finger of his left hand. "Rita," he said evenly to Richard Rita, "I am Father Samson, willing minister of our Lord Satan. Come, let us adore." His voice, the hands and fingers of the guests, the low organ music, the sultry night, the light feeling in his body, the languid odor of the incense, all this fell into a pattern of softness, which Richard Rita felt all around him. He turned as gravely as the others, and he walked in procession around the pool, past the tall candlestick, until they reached one of the altars. Now he had no further difficulty in understanding what was required of him. He waited passively and quietly. They easily lifted Richard Rita and placed him on his back flat on the altar. Father Samson then appeared carrying a chalice. Someone placed a small folded cloth on Richard Rita's pubic hair. Samson stood the chalice on the cloth. Then Richard Rita heard three voices chanting the opening words of the old Latin Mass, In nomine Patrii et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, to which they added the extra name, Et Domini Nostri Satanas, our Lord Satan. Richard Rita now understood. He felt a strange exultation. Father Samson had begun reading from a black-bound book held by another naked guest, a woman of about 35. He gestured gravely as he proceeded. The others had grouped themselves around in two concentric circles. The inner circle, all males, had placed, each one, the left hand on some part of Richard Rita's body. Those in the outer circle, all females, had placed their hands on the hips of the male. All right, fasten your seatbelt. You might want to turn off. Just before the consecration, a woman pricked a vein in Richard Rita's arm, letting some drops of his blood fall and mix with the wine in the chalice. Once Father Samson had uttered the words of the consecration, that is, "This is my body," the guests paired off, lay down on the floor, each man lying between the legs of a woman. Father Samson parted Richard Rita's leg, mounted the altar, entered Richard Rita fully, took the chalice, sipped it, and held it to Richard Rita's lips so he could sip it, and handed it to the nearest pair. While this pair was sipping the chalice, Father Samson started rhythmically to push and pull in Richard Rita, saying as a refrain, "Satan, Satan, Satan," lengthening the first syllable as he drew partially out of Richard Rita and hitting the second syllable with hard emphasis as he drove in. As each pair handed on the chalice, they started to copulate following the rhythm of Father Samson, all until men, woman, and Father Samson were chanting and copulating in unison. Richard Rita was the only silent one. He lay, eyes closed, while Father Samson chanted on him. For the first time, Richard Rita felt a strange tingling starting at his buttock, up through his spine, up the nape of his neck, around his skull, down into his shoulder blades, past his middle and abdomen, in and around his vagina, and down through his groin and calves, to the tips of his toe. For all the world, it felt as if an electrifying fluid was being poured into him from Samson. Richard Rita opened his eyes to look at Samson, but the light was too dim, and the blue trails of the incense were weaving through his vision. Richard Rita could hear heavy breathing, but he could see no face, only the outline of a head. He murmured, "Father Samson, Lord Satan, Father Samson, Lord," but he was interrupted by a harsh, grating sound of single words coming to him through the heavy breathing. "Girl fixer, girl fixer, girl fixer." Richard Rita no longer heard the chant of Satan. Now all seemed to be joining in, "Girl fixer, girl fixer, girl fixer." Of course, that is the name of this particular big entity that they were conjuring. Father Samson's index finger was now deep in Richard Rita's rectum, massaging, scooping, probing, pulling, pushing, Richard Rita felt his own semen being loosened and flowing, and inside him, he had a sharp sensation of a very hot, sticky oil squirting around the wall of his vagina as he heaved and shook. Have me, girl fixer, Father Satan, have me, smell me, F me, through, through. Richard Rita's voice rose steeply into a loud scream. The organ notes thundered, filling the air. As each pair of the guests reached orgasm, they screamed and groaned in a jumble of half words. Sate, F, take, sate, have, smell, cunt, prick. The scene subsided slowly. As the waves of pain, pleasure, and exultation ebbed in Richard Rita, he knew that he now had a shadow, or at least that is how he described it. It was not glued to his body, nor did it fall on the ground beside him wherever he went. It was like a twin spirit or soul of his own soul or spirit. And it possessed his own thoughts, memories, imaginations, desires, words. Richard Rita again opened his eyes. Father Samson was gone. Paul, his host, unsmiling, grave, helped him off the altar and motioned him to stand, legs well apart. One by one, the guests came forward on their knees, bending the head and pronouncing the long word, Satan. They clamped their lips over his vagina and sucked. Then they backed away out of the pool area. When the last guest was done, Paul handed Richard Rita his clothes, helped him to dress, led him around the house to the front, where a limousine waited with its engine ticking. The chauffeur opened the door for Richard Rita. You belong now, Rita. Serve him well, was Paul's parting phrase. That is disgusting, but we need to know this for a couple of reasons. First off, there were early Christian movements, the Carpocratians for one, that used to do this very same thing and are written of by the heresy hunter Epiphanius in the 5th century. He preserved a lot of what they did, describing these particular acts as their communion. And the second reason is because this, according to Martin, is not only being done regularly in the Vatican and Catholic churches, but really all over the world. You can understand why it's kept secret, because it is disgusting as much as it is a spiritual death. This is happening. The Black Mass is a mockery of the Catholic Mass, the liturgy of the Mass. And in his book, he has the full copy of the Catholic liturgy of exorcism, which is good and useful, but that's as far as he goes on this particular subject. And to think that we encounter people, maybe every day, that are involved in this. I read the account of a nurse, a believing nurse, that somehow found herself working for a hospital that was completely devoted to this. All the people of the hospital were involved, and it was their mission to get people possessed by these demons that came up in their masses. I wish I could remember who this was. It's been a while since I read this, but the nurse gave a complete account, and there's, of course, similarity between what Martin says. Yes, yes, yes. Rebecca Brown, thank you. We need to look that book over again. Yes, it's scary stuff. But ignorance, as I said this morning, is not bliss. We could be dealing with these people all the time. Not for the initiates, he said. For sure. You need to be strong in your faith. And I would expect everybody here is strong in their faith. What we often do with our little prayers and our promises to pray that we seldom fulfill is, as off the cuff as they are and as spiritual as they seems too little when it comes to this kind of evil in the world. And another thing that Martin suggests here, though I have not read this, I'll have to look at the Keys of His Blood book, that somebody I really admired was involved in this as well, and that's Pope John Paul II. I've read a lot of his work, especially his daily devotionals, written a series of sermons based on some of his devotionals. They are so good. Yet it's hard to even fathom a man like that, who is now a saint, could be involved in such devilry as this. Here recently, again, there was another expose on the Roman Catholic Church. It's just come out to correspond with now the Vatican meetings to face the sexual crisis in the church. They just started up, or they will start, I think, the 23rd, and this book just came out. And this writer of the book, who's deep in the Vatican, says that 9 out of 10, priests, cardinal, etc., are involved in some kind of sexual demon worship. 9 out of 10. And that 9 out of 10 of all priests are homosexuals. And that this church is a club for homosexuals. Those that are not have a hard time getting anywhere. They get assigned the lowest parishes or the crappiest work. They're under investigation all the time, especially those that work in exorcism. And wouldn't you know, exorcists are supposed to be appointed in every diocese of the Catholic Church. And who do they appoint? The greenest, dumbest, least educated of the parish or the clergy parish that they assume, I would believe, just couldn't pull something like deliverance off. As a matter of fact, again, in Hostage to the Devil, the 5 priests and their teams involved in the exorcisms here, the priests all ended up badly because they had not been properly trained or had not even been introduced to the spiritual worship through the Holy Spirit. They were just given this job and they had to go do it or their career was over. Of course, there is training in the Catholic Church to some extent, and it's always done in teams. But some of the priests that are involved in these 5 exorcisms themselves need to be exorcised. Martin goes through the entire history of all the personnel involved in all these exorcisms. That's how deeply that he was involved in these things, including this story of Richard and Richard Rita. Martin was not there. But when Richard Rita was finally delivered, well, the result of that was, first of all, the priest that did it died soon after. It exhausted him, but killed him and did finally kill him. But also, Richard Rita, who's now just Richard, he described this in detail. Martin gets this from him. And through the parts that Martin is not involved in, he gets from the people who were involved. And as you heard, these descriptions are quite intricate. So I'm wondering, do we have any comments on this? Do you have experience in this by any chance? Or what have been your experiences that made you think that something wasn't quite right in your world or in somebody else's? Please. Looks like I lost 2 people with that reading. Right. Gregory says he doesn't feel like he's suited for that kind of ministry. It's good that you know that, but it's also good that you know something of what it is involved, because one of the jobs of any pastor is that he or she needs to be a reference for referrals. It's easy for a spirit-filled man or woman to tell if somebody is being harassed by bodiless powers or being infiltrated or possessed. It's easy to tell. And it's easy to tell what is possession or partial possession between what is a mental illness. It's no doubt that Satan can use a mental illness to get into a person, but these people who were exercised in this book, none of them came out from the psychiatric, their psychiatric group as being mentally ill. Okay, brother, thank you for stopping by. MacBook, I don't know who you are, says, I have known 4 witches priestesses in the Messianic Hebrew Roots movement. Not all were delivered. Well, isn't that a surprise? Isn't that a surprise? I've had 3 of my churches infiltrated by witches. 2 of those witches, 3 of those witches came and told me so. They told me who they were, what they were there to do, to destroy the church and my ministry, and challenged me to do anything about it. Of course, not with anyone present. But this is something that I had to deal with, knowing that they were infiltrated. Some had been in membership of those churches for a long time. They'd been planted a long time ago. 2 battles I won, 1 I lost. And that was a sad day. This woman, a young woman, was so implanted in the church in Mobile, Alabama, the big church downtown on Government Street. She'd been so implanted there, even her father had been the pastor at one time. And she was there working undercover for a local witch coven all the time. One of these witches, one of them, after informing me what they were about, in the middle of a service, started marching down the aisle from the back door, speaking in tongues, holding up a large poster of the Illuminati Eye, marching down right in the middle of the sermon to obviously try to disrupt the whole thing. That was a blatant attack, and that was a man. That man got his hind end kicked out the back steps by me personally. A third time, a woman made an appointment with me, told me I am a black witch, and I want to get into the ministry of the denomination. I want you to help me. And if you don't, I am going to ruin your ministry here. And then she began to come, sat there on the pew smiling week after week. And I told her, you've got to go. You cannot come back here. If you come back here, I'm going to escort you out and I will call down angels so that you can never get back in here again.
I want to let you in on a little secret. Please do not tell anyone about my secret because it is very limited to just a few fortunate people. But here it is. The Vero Essien Yard is sponsoring a new event, Wilderness Bootcamp, just for you. With tabernacling and a feast of Pentecost, according to the Zadokite calendar. Experience a slice of life from the journey of the historical Essenes, June 6th through 10, 2019. 4 nights, 5 days. You know, Pentecost was the main feast for Essenes, Nazarenes, and Enochians. Pentecost in 2019 is the 9th of June, again according to the Zadokite calendar. This is a very inexpensive event, and it is also semi-primitive. So why not check your bug-out bag right now and see if you have the things you need to bug out the Vero Essien Yahad Wilderness Bootcamp and Pentecost. June 6th through 10th, 2019, lodging, 4 nights, only $60. Yes, you heard me, $60. Where? In the very popular Harrison Bay State Park near Chattanooga, Tennessee. And one feature that we're going to try this year for boot camp is spelunking. Yes, there are beautiful caves nearby. We will try to re-experience the life and livelihood of the earliest wilderness camps. Of course, we're going to have electric, and we're going to have water in bathrooms. What we can't do without those these days. But why don't you go right now and check out the details at www.essene.faith. Again, www.essene.faith. Or contact me, your brother Bogdan Shrumkov, at theveroyahad at gmail.com. Am I going to be there? No. I'm too old, and besides, Medicare won't pay for it. But you can be there, but again, very limited number can come. Check us out, essene.faith. Can I have a big amen?
And I told her, you've got to go. You cannot come back here. If you come back here, I'm going to escort you out and I will call down angels so that you can never get back in here again. But she came again, and in the middle of the church, I called her out in the name of Yeshua. The people in the church knew that name. And she stood up, she began speaking in tongues, cursing and swearing, and I escorted her out the door. And I got a bad reputation in town. Oh, that poor woman. She wasn't doing anything but sitting on the pew. Of course, there's no such thing as witches. Why did you do this, Brother Snyder? And I lost people out of church that day. I was vindicated about 2 months later when she began to infiltrate the Baptist church. See, the Baptist church heard about her being expelled from our church. And to gain favor, They went to this woman and invited her in. Well, you can fellowship in our church. We're not like that, etc. So they invited her in, and in she went and took up the occupation of destroying that church too, until she was exposed. And again, they had to put her out. But I wouldn't be surprised if witches or wizards or demon-possessed people were assigned to every viable church, no matter what size, but churches especially that were coming alive spiritually or in wisdom. And in that last church, we started a deliverance team. That was where we had the first Yahad. That was 2001. If you heard my podcast on hosts of demons invade a small community, if you're interested in this, you'll hear that I had 4 years of practice in this small community that abounded with incubi and succubi that visited the old women of the church at night and had intercourse with them and with the men. Some of these women welcomed it. They hadn't been had any attention for years, and they invited these in, and they continued to go to church as though they were ignorant of what was going on. In that particular case, in 1996, there had been an earthquake in this area, in this community, and through a prophetic word, we found out the source of hordes of demons of every kind, from insect types right on up to the occult types, like the one that came after me, and I'll just admit it, that raped me 2 times before I got a handle on how to get rid of it. They were everywhere, coming out of trees, boldly attacking members of the sheriff's office who we invited over. They would come out of nowhere and knock people down and show themselves. And this one poor guy, whose backyard opened up after the earthquake, where all these things came out, was on his property. He was pestered like no one I ever knew. Things like, well, he called them homosexual insects, would get all over him and push him, and they show up at night, and went over and did a exorcism of his house one day when he was gone. I don't know what that's on that podcast or not, but I don't know why I've been drug into so many of these things. But as I said earlier, since Mignon passed, I haven't been involved, except Lee told me, yes, you were, today after I mentioned those things. And he named off an instance that where, yes, I definitely was involved in this one time since then. I'm just wondering, is it time to go back in? Is it time to put together a team? You don't want to do it by yourself. But there's this factor of having to be a spiritual believer, for sure, and protecting yourself. But it's really, though tiring and dirty work, it's not hard work. Not unless you, like some of these priests did, get curious about the demon and getting them to talk and to tell you their stories. That's when it gets hard. You're giving them some hold. And I have no doubt that everybody here, well, in a team, everybody has a job. One person does the deliverance. They have a sub, a clergy person usually. They have a doctor on hand, medical doctor, and they have 2 assistants that are able to hold the subject down if need be, or tend, like I talked about today, this ectoplasm coming out of this woman, taking care of that while the one doing the main job of exorcism is still working on it. Any other comments? This is supposed to be a forum.
Yeah, I wanted to share a personal story.
Good.
You know, attesting to the fact that you need some kind of training in how to do this, because my friend was hearing voices. He said he was hearing from God. And I'm like, well, what is God telling you? And we just sat there and had a conversation about what God was telling him. And I'm like, well, God already said this in the scriptures, so he can't be telling you that. And he's like, God told him to eat dog poo and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, bro, you are possessed. So I tried, you know, I was like, what is your name? Get out of him. And it seemed like it left him for just a couple seconds. And then it came right back. And I couldn't do anything. I was just like at a loss for words. I'm like, do I not, you know, have belief? Can I not cast out a demon? And so, like, when you mentioned earlier that you have some stuff on how all this goes down, that I really need to look at that, because, you know, I don't know. I was, like, doubting whether or not he even was possessed by a demon, even though it seemed pretty obvious. And I was also doubting, you know, my own faith, because how can I not cast out a demon? So, I mean, it does, like, I definitely want to look at that stuff and see how this is done.
It's more like persistence than it is power, because you already got the power. You just have to persist. But see, it sounds like this guy was infiltrated. And yes, they will often just speak right up to you. I got one that does it to me every day here. But they'll hide. If you make an attempt on them, they'll hide. They're weak in that way. But full possession, that's something different altogether. That is a strenuous work because they have invited it in. So he said that God told him some things.
Yeah, he said it was God was talking to him all day, every day, just telling him what to do, telling him what to say, and everything like that. And he ended up going into a mental institution for a little bit because his parents were afraid and everything. And, you know, I went in there and I tried to help out. It just did not work out. He almost got worse after that.
I tried to do it in a nursing home one time to a quadriplegic, and you just can't do it in those kinds of atmospheres because there are people around that will prosecute you for that. That's another story, though. Definitely horrible things manifested, but we couldn't do anything about it. I came back twice, and finally the guy's wife said, "Don't come back here again. We're of the Church of Christ. I know I asked you to come and help me with him, but I can't see him tortured like this." I said, "He's not tortured. Whatever is torturing him is being tortured." But you know, your education can only go as far as your religion does. So what kind of things were the spirit telling him to do? Do you know, Desmond?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah. What did he say, some of the things that he was told to do, or was he just being told to do everything?
He said he was being told to do every and anything, and then he was just talking to him all the time. I remember, like, when we first started, it started that he said God was saying, if you love people, then take their dogs for a walk and become a freelance dog walker that you don't charge for. So he just started going around the neighborhood asking people if he could walk their dogs. We started walking their dog. And then he was walking the dog, and it, like, you know, went to the bathroom. And he said that, you know, he told him, if you're really committed to this job, you should do everything with all your mind, all your heart, and all your soul. So eat the dog food to prove that you're committed to this job. And I'm just like, what? That is not God. Like, how could you for a second even think that that's God? And we started talking about, what were we talking about? Oh, he started just saying certain things. He was like, he was telling me, he was like, he was getting on to me by the fact that I keep Sabbath and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, explaining to him in the scriptures that God set the seventh day holy and he commanded us to, so that's why I do it. And he started, you know, critiquing my, belief and saying that, you know, you're just trying to walk in the works of the law and you're just trying to, you're using all intellect and you're not using any faith. You need to use faith like I am, listening to God. If you, you know, really knew God, you would be able to hear his voice and hear him talking to you too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know that a person really needs to seek out help. That it annoys me to no end when believers say, well, God told me this and God told me that. It makes me think that the demon that's pushing him around is named God. Maybe that was the name of the thing. You know what God means in Hebrew? It means luck or lucky man. So in one particular case, this thing that it was buggering me, I couldn't get its name. And my friend was praying about this, a guy that was on the team we started. And he said, I don't know if this has anything to do with your problem, but I had a dream last night and I saw some scribbling in my dream. I said, you can't remember that scribbling, can you? He said, yes, I can. And he drew me three characters. This is not an educated man. Three characters in perfect Babylonian Hebrew. He said, this is the name of that thing that's bugging you. And so, you know, I subscribed the letters and then I called the rabbi up just to make sure. I said, what does this mean to you? The word was Letzer. That would be a lambda, Zadai, and the R, Rosh. He said, that means joker or trick player. And when I started using that name, that's when I started to be able to get this thing away from me. I mean, it's painful to be attacked by an incubus in the middle of the night when you're half asleep, and then to have it happen again. But clues can come in, and Yahweh will give you insight into these things. If a guy just wants to argue about religion, it seems like everybody with a little bit of knowledge thinks they're an expert in theology, don't you think? They're all experts. They can all tell you exactly what you're doing wrong, even though you're following the Torah. You know, you are a Judaizer, a legalist, a hypocrite, all this stuff. But it seems to me that somebody like that ought to be able to see for themselves in Exodus 20 what the real God has to say about it.
Another thing, Well, I was one of the, I just remembered something else that we were talking about. My friend had told me that this particular friend had gone over to one of my other friend's house and peed on his kitchen floor for no reason. So when I was talking to him, I asked him why he did that. And he said that his dog peed in his house on the floor. So God wanted him to teach him a lesson and show him what it's like to just come over and, you know, let something pee on your floor. So he had to do it to him. I don't know if that adds to anything, but that was like another thing that, you know, this demon told him to do and said that it was, you know, the reasoning of God why he was doing it.
Wow. Well, what do you think?
I think he was, you know, talking to an evil spirit. Like he was hearing an evil spirit telling him to do evil things and was leading him down this awful path. And all it did was ruin his life. Like he lost his wife. He lost his job. He lost everything, ended up in a mental institution, and now he's living at home with his mom, and his mom can barely handle him, and she doesn't know what to do.
You think it's mental illness, or?
Well, that's what everybody says. They're just like, he's a schizophrenic. You know, it is what it is. He's like, as long as he's on his pills, he's all right. And I'm like,
as I said, that's one philosophy of treating these things. Keep the thing quiet with drugs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I may not be right about this, but when I hear people talk about mental illnesses and things like that, you know, I always think there's a spiritual, you know, foundation to this kind of stuff. Not that, you know, people just go schizophrenic for no reason. Maybe it is. Maybe it is just, you know, a medical condition. But it seems like in the Bible, medical conditions or these, you know, uncleannesses that it talks about or illnesses are results of spiritual things that are going on.
It seems like it can be either way, like mental illness, of course, any kind of illness breeds openings for something to come in, like this quadriplegic. He was a strong believer in his church. He got hit by a van, and he just deteriorated from then because he was in a bed strapped down all the time. It's like a big old fat spider come on him and just sucked into him. Someday I'd like to tell that again because there's a lot to be learned from that particular aspect. He couldn't talk anymore, but boy, his face told the tale. Or on the opposite side, spiritual sickness, that is demonism, well, did I say that already, lead to mental illness, or mental illness can lead to infiltration for sure, any kind. You know, I've been dealing with, especially this last year, my illness, and I've been just extremely debilitated from it. But I'm beginning to realize that maybe this isn't the illness. Maybe I've got something attached. Of course, it's not. I'm not possessed or anything like that. I'm sure of that. I'm sure of that. I feel free. But still, it's like a hindrance. No, it's like a ball and chain or something. The idea is to get you weak enough that you look for other powers to invite in. But if your relationship with the Almighty is strong, strong unto actually obeying him, her, as much as you can, strong enough to even going to Torah, that would be, and you were cognizant that evil powers are trying to get you, it seems like you would be pretty well protected. Of course, when you do this, you need to protect yourself with prayer. And afterwards, you need to clean up in prayer. One thing that I used to do is I'd take a shower, like a baptism, and clean the muck off. There was a time when I put a team together and we had to go through a church, an old church, a 3-4-story church, and it was infiltrated. I mean, poltergeists, noises, tables turned over, and people going nuts in the church. We went through that thing from the top to the bottom into the crawl space. And the most effective tools we had, other than words, because these things couldn't talk, they were lower level, was salt. We blessed salt and we blessed water with the ancient blessings. Some say, well, that's not scriptural. Well, there's no instruction in the scripture how to use toilet paper either. But they work to the point where you shower. Well, we got them stuck in a corner in the crawl space. You shower them with this salt. You see sparks every place and hear moans and groans. And the same thing with the water. The water goes like it's burned up. When you see manifestations like that, how can you think that that's mental illness among 5 or 6 people that are trying to get the things out? Some things are just really evident. And about the child in the supermarket crying and screaming, I know I've told this several times, but you can test your ability when you have that kind of a problem or that kind of annoyance, because it seems like 9 out of 10 times it's a spirit of fear that's entered that child, and you're clear across the other side of the supermarket and you hear it. Just command through your spiritual power that demon of anger to leave that helpless child. They don't have to hear it. You can say it under your breath or even just in your mind. And there has not been one time for me that that thing hasn't stopped crying within 10, 20 seconds, leveled down and stopped. That's a good test for yourself. What it come into children are really easy. But if they come into your children or they're tormenting your children, you get overly concerned about it. Oh, I've worked a lot with young children in deliverance ministry. I ought to do podcasts of this stuff. Because somebody needs to be called into this ministry. There's such a need in this day. Nobody can look at the government in the last 30 years and not see that big occult demons are filling up sacks of bones and fat and animating them in some of the most horrid ways possible. And to hear that government officials, as well as Catholic priests, are engaged in black masses, the stories of missing children disappearing, the stories about finding worship sites out in the country someplace with dead animals or animals' skin, their blood all over. This ought to be annoying to everybody, but the people that do this keep it super secret. They would like everybody to know, but they're afraid that little tongue-tied preacher might get anointed and put an end to it. The things that were written in that book about that black mass were extremely disgusting and hard for me to read, much less read out loud. And I know I'll have some explaining to do to a couple people, but an active believer needs to know this. There have been so many rumors about government officials and church officials being involved in this. And look at the church. Just recently, 900 more preachers in Baptist churches have been found to be child molesters, and who knows what else.
I actually have a personal experience with that. The very first church that I ever went to was a Baptist church, a fundamental Baptist church. And, you know, I thought it was like a sign from God. It was actually, I was 24 years old and I was an atheist. I didn't believe in God at all. Matter of fact, I tried to use science to disprove God, and I pulled a couple of people away from the faith, which I regret to this day. I tried to make amends for that, but, you know, they've already gone and they don't want to come back type deal. But anyway, the pastor knocked on my door the day after I prayed for the first time. It was when I was 24 years old. I felt the weight of all my sin, and I just knew that my life had amounted to nothing. If I died now, then, you know, I would have done nothing in my entire life. I would have wasted it all. All I did was sin and do things for myself, and no one, like, it just wouldn't matter that I was even alive. And I just started crying, and I prayed for the first time that night. And the very next day was Sabbath, and I didn't notice at the time that it was Sabbath, but the very next day, a preacher and his disciple, they came up and they knocked on my door. And they were like, "Do you know where you're going when you die?" And I'm like, "I got a good idea and I don't want to go." So we sat down and talked, and I started going to their church. Mm-hmm. Well, I was there for a couple years and really liked it. It was my first, you know, experience reading the Bible and getting into the Word and, you know, understanding these things. And it was fundamental Baptist stuff. And then, you know, one day I said something, or I questioned the pastor on something he said, because I saw that scripture was painting a different picture than what he was saying. And I questioned him, and I got, like, you know, I basically got warned, like, if you ever do that again, you'll be out of here, because I did it in front of everybody. And maybe that was the wrong way to do it.
What exactly did you do again?
Well, he was talking about certain things. It was like gambling and a few other things. I forget what it was, but I was just showing the spirit behind what I was saying what I thought the spirit was behind what God was saying. And that if someone was just sitting down having a fun game playing with pennies at their house, then I don't think, you know, that you're stealing from people if everybody agrees to sit down and play a game of poker. You know, I don't think that's, you know, stealing from someone or something, like he was trying to paint it. And maybe I was right or wrong, but just the spirit that came about afterwards about how, like, you know, you don't ever question the pastor. Yeah. I was like, whoa, this is like a cult mentality.
Not in the Baptist church, you don't.
Well, yeah. And then after that, I had left the church when I moved. I stayed there until I moved. And then when I moved, about 2 weeks after I moved, the pastor got arrested for molesting his own daughter. And I was like, wow, I knew something didn't feel right.
Wow.
And I started to question my whole faith and everything, because I was like, you know, I prayed to God for the first time, and this is the guy that came and knocked on my door the next day, which seemed like a sign from God to me. And I questioned everything. I'm like, you know, I almost went back to atheism after that. Thank God I didn't.
Yeah, I was going to ask where that put you, but still, you got your toe in the water over there, and he got your toe in the water.
I never saw it coming in a million years. Yeah. I would go to his house like every other weekend after Sunday church, and we would eat dinner, and I would eat dinner with him and his family. And like on the surface, you would never see anything that would throw up any red flags. Everything seemed good. He's just a nice, you know, God-loving pastor. He'd get up on that pulpit, he'd bang it, and he'd cry, and you know, everything. And it seemed like he was legit in, you know, his spirit about everything. But to find out that he was having sexual misconduct with his own daughter, it was just like a mind blower. I just like couldn't even grasp that concept that he, of all people in the world, this pastor that shared God with me for the first time, could do something like that.
I don't understand how anyone could do that. But like you, I want to be holy. Holiness prohibits things for us personally. That means, I mean to say, these things want to destroy you, but they don't want to get personally involved with a holy person, because in the end, they're going to fail and they'll be eaten up themselves. Well, it's time to go. I really appreciate you hanging in here with this, and I'm sorry if anybody was offended, but again, I was led to do this, and I think I'll do some more on it because I got so many stories to tell. Maybe I'm supposed to at this time of my life. I don't know. I had loathed it for the last 2 years, but I'm thinking now maybe it's time to get moving. Thank you, guys. Enjoy your Shabbat. Bye, Norman.
Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing.
No, that's not all there is. Join us tomorrow night for more Jackson Snyder.
Presents.
Sorry.